And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Not much, Shane. Have you heard the rumors? Old James Franklin, one of our favorites from our old SEC days there in Vanderbilt. Ugh. Sounds like he may be looking for a USC job. We're going to play this clip, Shane, and you know, he was asked about it. And I don't know if you're hearing what I'm hearing here, Shane, but he clearly did not deny it.
Do you know how the speculation regarding you and the USC job got started, and how would you like to address it?
Yeah, you know, first of all, I guess it's that time of year where all this stuff happens. It's, you know, it's that time of year. It's the crazy, mad time of year where these types of things happen. So as you guys know, like always, you know, we're focused on Maryland completely, 100%. I don't even think it's fair or right to even be talking about that job, you know, from everything I understand about it. But, you know, we're completely focused on, you know, on Maryland.
All right, Shane, so, I mean, it seems like a pretty simple question that he could deny, and to go off of that, I also have recently found, after finding this video, this is even worse. This is from the Big Ten teleconference. Apparently, he was asked similar thing from a reporter. Here's the back and forth, Shane. This is a reporter speaking. He said, "Will you be the coach of Penn State next season?" And Franklin says, "Excuse me?" And the reporter says, "Are you going to be the head coach at Penn State?" And Franklin, laughing, says, "This doesn't surprise me. Again, like I said in the press conference, speculation is everywhere. It's that crazy time of year. I'm focused on Maryland. It's no different than when you ask me about injuries or these other things. I'm happy to discuss Maryland and our football team." And then the reporter says, "Yeah, well, it's a yes-no question. Speculation would be a lot less if you just said yes. You are, wouldn't you say?" And Franklin says, "Yeah, I answered your question." And the reporter says, "Well, you didn't." And then that's all.
Dude, I'm telling you what, man. These Big Ten media people up there. Do you remember? It wasn't that long ago that dude was drilling Harbaugh about playing Ohio State. Do you remember that one?
Oh yeah.
The gloves are off up north, brother, and Franklin was squirming. He ain't in Vanderbilt anymore.
I mean, I don't know what else, you know, you get. I know there's been people like Saban's been asked point blank about Alabama, and he said no, and then a day later, I think it was, he was there. Yep. And yeah, I mean, I held that against him for a while. I don't know about you, Shane, but who in the hell cares? I mean, I don't understand what the hell Franklin's doing here, why he wouldn't just... You know, if I were him, I would just say, "Well, hell, I got a better job now. Why would I leave?" You know, like he could just make up anything and just say it. But to completely ignore it, I don't put a ton of credit into these rumors. But when these guys have these interactions, it makes me think that there's something to them.
Yeah. Let me ask you, because I don't follow this loser. Does he is he trying to get another job or something? I mean, I know they lost against Michigan. It looks like Michigan State and Ohio State, so they're the big brothers.
Right.
But is he trying to get another spot somewhere?
Well, I don't know. Not that I really know. Like you said, like we don't really follow the Big Ten, but just something that's out there, and I guess that's why he's facing these questions. But just kind of found it comical the way he's answering these.
I got you.
Speaking of comical, Shane, we do have another one here, more SEC related. Florida State quarterback DeAndre Francois, he was asked a pretty simple question, another layup, kind of like James Franklin, but and he chose to go a different route. So here's old DeAndre Francois on the difference between Miami and Florida.
We play a couple rivalry games every year. What makes this one different from Miami?
What makes it different from Miami? It's Florida. It's not Miami.
All right, Shane, seems like the Florida State quarterbacks got it. I mean, he nailed it on this one.
Oh, I'm telling you, man. He has got a QB IQ out of this world. I mean, he hit it. I mean, what's the difference between Florida and Miami? Well, Miami's Miami, and Florida's Florida. So, I love it. You can't make this shit up.
I mean, any confidence I had in Florida State pulling the upset basically went out the window when I saw this clip, Shane.
Yeah, no, they're not gonna. They have no shot in this thing unless Florida just. If they just come out and lay a goose egg, I guess, and are not in it. But I think this is a big rivalry and something we're going to touch on later. Dan loves and supports rivalry, so. I'm hoping he's got these boys fired up and keep FSU out of bowl game.
All right, Shane. So we're recording this on Tuesday evening, and just a little while ago, the College Football Playoff Committee came out with their new top 25. Not a lot of shakeup. I'm gonna just run down there's seven SEC teams. There's a new team ranked in the SEC, and then I'll go over the top 10 here before we. So here's the new college football ranking. So here's the SEC teams first. Alabama, of course, they remain number one. Mm-hmm. Got Georgia at number five. LSU remains number seven, so the top three are the same. Florida jumped a couple spots. They're up to a number 11. Kentucky's moved up a couple spots. They're at 15. Mississippi State's moved up a couple. They're at 18. And the team I teased there, Texas A&M, they're back in the poll at number 22. And as for the complete top 10, Shane, Alabama, Clemson number 2, Notre Dame number 3, Michigan number 4, Georgia number 5, Oklahoma number 6, LSU number 7, Washington State number 8, UCF number 9 somehow, and Ohio State number 10. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, it's good to see a lot of SEC teams. What'd you say, 7?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 7 in the new top 25.
So, I mean, hell, half the SEC is ranked in the top 25. I mean, what else could you ask for, you know? I just love to see the dominance, and I guarantee no other conference has as many teams as we do.
Any thoughts on UCF being at number 9? Do you think they've earned it? They're ahead of teams like Ohio State, Florida, and teams like that?
I hate UCF. I mean – Don't get me going again, Mike. They shouldn't be a top 25 team, if you ask me. It's like putting UAB up there. But the fact that they've been undefeated for, what, almost 2 years now,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's time to give them a freaking challenge. And I hope it's not a team that's deflated like Auburn was last year. I mean, obviously UCF's not going to make a playoff, even though I'd love to see it. But I would also love to see it maybe be against maybe an SEC loser. So if it's Georgia or Alabama, I mean, could you imagine either one of those teams facing off against UCF, especially with all the noise they made last year? So, or even LSU sneaking up there. So that's what I want to see. And I'm telling you, these coaches need to get together on a conference call and say, whoever draws this straw better kick this ass, you know? Because Auburn, Gus, that was the start of the spiral with Gus. And, you know, they need to take notes on that. I mean, a bowl game is very important. And I just hope whoever, like I said, whoever plays them, I pray that it's an SEC team.
Imagine if Georgia lost the SEC championship game. I would imagine they'll go to a New Year's Six game and Georgia versus UCF. That would not be pretty, you know?
No, it would. I would love to see like 60 points hung on these fools. enough about them.
All right, Shane, before we get to news around the league, I just thought this was pretty interesting. So for the first time that I can remember, it's been several years here, the SEC East is going to finish with a better head-to-head record than the SEC West. I mean, for years, I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, I want to say it was like 12-2 or something insane like that. But the SEC East is currently up 8-5, and Missouri is hosting Arkansas. So you got to assume that's going to be 9-5 head to head. Mm-hmm. Florida was undefeated against the West. And if on the opposite side, Alabama and Texas A&M, they were undefeated against the East. But outside of LSU's win over Georgia, a West team has not beaten an East team outside of those three teams. So any thoughts on that, Shane? And just kind of, I don't know, does this mean that the SEC East is better than the West, or just is that too big of a leap to make?
I think it's a little too big of a leap. I honestly still think West has the nod as far as top to bottom talent. But the East is sneaking up, man. This is 2 years in a row that we've gotten a little bit closer. We've got teams like Kentucky. We've got teams like Missouri. We've got teams like Florida on the rise. You know, just I just think that they're kind of sneaking up on them, and which I love because it just makes the game better when you have when you don't have lopsided divisions, because nobody wants to see a blowout in an SEC matchup. You want to see close games, and we've seen a lot of that this year. So I'm excited about the playing field being kind of equal going into next year.
Yeah, and of course, you know, obviously Georgia won the East. They won the whole damn league last year, so
yeah,
that's another, you know, tip of the cap to the East. But let me ask you this, Shane. With recent hires like Dan Mullen and Jeremy Pruitt, and we've seen, I think, Mark Stoops and Barry Odom, you know, get much more respect, I think, but from the results of this year, is it possible that the SEC East overall has better coaches than the SEC West? Would you go that far?
Oh, man.
Because I think both the Mississippi schools, I don't think we can say they're bad coaches, but we certainly can't say they're good coaches based on what we've seen.
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
Let's
break it down. You got Saban on the West. Mm-hmm. Who you're like, maybe Jimbo, as far as just coaching and coaching experience. Jimbo, maybe even Gus, even though he's been kind of, you know, his team sucked this year. But wouldn't you say those are the top three in the West?
I think I would give, well, out of the West, yes.
Okay, and now let's just, okay, so that's the top three. And let's go to the East side right now, just pure coaching. Yeah, I mean, obviously Kirby's up there.
Dan Mullen.
Maybe Dan. Maybe even Stoops, you know, just for what he's been able to do with the talent he has.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Muschamp even. I mean, Muschamp's even, you know, he's hit or miss right now. But I would say top to bottom, yeah, I think you're right. I think the East has better coaching. And part of that has to do with the West, trying to keep up with Nick Saban. So maybe that's why you've seen a lot more investing. Other than Texas State, I mean, I don't know. I guess you could go back with Mississippi State, but a lot of those guys are unproven right now. And Morris and Moorhead, I just – those guys haven't quite got it or done there. It's like saying Pruitt, you know. Is he just now starting? So I can't compare him. But but I think those tops, yeah, I think you got – I think you got a little bit better coaching in the East right now. I still think you got better talent in the West, though. Yeah. I just think –
Well, now that we've talked this out, Shane, I think the West still has better coaching. but that's because they have, you know, the guys that I would probably put at the very top.
Yeah.
But they probably have the guys that I would put at the very bottom as well. So, and then the East, I think if you want to go 1 through 7, I think is much more close together, but that's a solid group. So I think it'd be good if none of these coaches got fired and we just give all of them another year. I think that's a sign of just kind of the strength of the conference and the coaching. And I think that's what was lacking the last couple of years, why kind of Alabama and I guess Auburn kind of just took such a huge step forward and the rest of the league kind of didn't, you know?
Yeah. Do you think like this kind of turn and burn coaching has like really changed the way football's played these days? I mean, they're expected to win 2 years in, 3 years in, and some of these rebuilds take a full 4 or 5 years before you can get, you know, your guys in there. So it just seems like they want it now. And I'm from Tennessee, and we've been wanting it since Fulmer left. So, I mean, but I've kind of gotten to the point where let's just stick with him. If Pruitt struggles the next 2 years, so what? At least as long as we see something a little bit better each year, I'm good with that and good with sticking with a coach for a while. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you're right, Shane, because if you look, I know Arkansas fans were fed up with Brett Bielema, but, I mean, their team is just garbage now. He was a hell of a coach, I thought. Now, I don't think he was quite as good as his reputation. You know, he went to three consecutive Rose Bowls with Wisconsin, but there was always games every single year. Maybe not the last year, but just every year, it just seemed like he was beating a team like LSU, or he beat Florida. And it wasn't even like a fluke wins. I mean, these were like 24-7, 38-14. I mean, he was beating the piss off a lot of these teams. So I think you're right. I think in a different era, he would have been given more time. And I think that would have been the right move. Florida, I mean, hell, they went, what'd they do? Won back-to-back SEC East titles. And then they have one crazy year and they fire the fucking coach. I don't think that happens in a previous era. We got damn Kentucky fans that are, I don't think they want to fire Mark Stoops, but they want to fire a bunch of his staff because, my God, they lost to Georgia and Tennessee. I mean, people are just, they just get angry as hell. Gus Malzahn wanting to get kicked out, which is crazy, but I kind of understand it just because of the contract. And I mean, we could just go on and on. Kevin Sumlin, I think in a different era, I think he'd still be at A&M, but they want to be a championship team, and I don't think he was going to get them quite that level. But as soon as someone starts to falter, bam, fans are ready to cut his ass. You know,
it's like backup quarterback syndrome. You know, the guy that's backing up your starter is always better. You know, in your mind, I remember when Garantano went down, like, all right, Keller, let's see what you got, brother. You know, I mean, that's just kind of the mentality you have. And then if you're having a rough year, like Auburn, you want to get rid of your coach and bring the next best thing in, the next Nick Saban or the next, you know, whoever, James Franklin when he went up to Penn State. You're looking for that next world beater, and sometimes you're not giving your staff, your team enough time and to work out the kinks. I mean, Bama didn't. I think they won, like, what, six games, five games their first year? You know, thank God they didn't fire Saban, because now look at them. So, I don't know. I just think a lot of times we want to pull the trigger too quick.
Well, I do remember this, Shane. I have a buddy who's a big Alabama fan who graduated from Tennessee. I don't know how in the hell that happened. But we were in school together when Nick Saban, his second year there at Bama, Alabama ran the table. But they lost in the SEC championship game to Florida, and they lost in the bowl game to Utah. I don't know if you remember that, but that was like a huge upset at the time. And he and his father, who's also a big Alabama fan, they said, well, hell, yeah, Nick Saban went 12-0, but he lost the two damn games that mattered. Like, oh, my God. That's what I knew. Those fucking Alabama people were just, you know, they were just gung-ho about winning a title. They were not happy with 12-2 10 years ago.
Oh God, I'd love to be 12-2, Mike. I would. I'd be singing in the streets, brother.
All right, Shane. So we had some pressers on Tuesday. So let's jump into that action by going around the league.
Let's do it.
Now let's go around the league. Around the league.
We hadn't decided how we're going to play the guys, so, and I wouldn't tell you if I did, so, you know, I don't mind you asking a question, but I don't need to answer it.
No, I mean, I'll be whistling Rocky Top by the end of the week, all our play. I mean, it's just like, right, I mean, just hear it over and over, and, you know, like every other or every third song, it'll roll through within the crowd noise that we play at practice, so you just you get used to it. It's a catchy tune, right? I mean,
this game's going to be a street fight. This game's going to be a street fight. I mean, some of you guys don't know who Kimbo Slice is. Hopefully you do. And you go back to it, man, this isn't a sanctioned fight. This is a street fight. I mean, this is the SEC. So, man, it's time. It's time to put on the hard hat. Lunch bell. Let's get to work.
All right, Shane, starting in Columbia, South Carolina, of course. Will Muschamp met with the media to preview the Clemson game. And, you know, this is a thorn in Will Muschamp's side. It just seems like whatever steps he takes, whether it's, hey, we went to a bowl game, hey, we won 9 games. That's quite an accomplishment. But you look across the state, the damn team is going to playoff after playoff, a winning damn national championship. It looks like they're on a collision course for another championship game. So this is just a very odd spot here for Will Muschamp. But I thought the most interesting thing he had to say, obviously this will be his third matchup against Clemson as South Carolina's coach. He's 0-2. Neither one has been really competitive. And this comment I thought kind of struck to, you know, just kind of a lot of things I think people like Dan Mullen, maybe Jeremy Pruitt, maybe some of these other first-year coaches can deal with, and that is getting your team, you know, prepared or just getting the buy-in factor that they can compete with these elite teams.
Well, I mean, I think it's more than anything. We went up there our first year and had some guys that flat out didn't compete, and that wasn't going to happen again. And that was our message for our football team. It's about competing, and that's the situation we were in. That first year, unfortunately, that's why we're here. And you got to continue to coach through that and continue to build the culture that you want within your organization. And we're much better now than we were then.
All right, Shane. So, I mean, just when I heard this, it just kind of struck me as things I've heard from maybe Dan Mullen after these Georgia or Missouri games. And we've heard this same type of thing from Pruitt after some of these losses. Just, you know, it's just – maybe they don't, I don't want to say buy-in factor, but maybe they just, you know, they obviously don't, they inherited a lot of guys and a lot of them are just not confident in maybe what they're doing or in themselves. What are your thoughts on these comments?
I mean, I think he hit the nail on the head there. It's tough to do it when it's not your players because some of them may not be bought in, or maybe they are initially, but then when the season doesn't go exactly like they planned and, you know, maybe they fall out. It just feels like this South Carolina team's a little bit like they're grittier, and you know they're finding a way to win games here late in the fourth. And I don't know, it just seems like they got a little chip on their shoulder, and it feels like a team out there. So I'm hoping that this is going to be a ball game, man.
Yeah, and I think you hit on something there, Shane. I think it's really easy to buy in at the beginning of the year. Everyone's positive. Everyone's undefeated. But look at a team like Arkansas, maybe even Ole Miss currently. Once things start going south, I think you start to see they lose interest and maybe just the buy-in that maybe was not full, you know, at the beginning of the year. If you start losing, then it's just completely gone. And I think it's, you know, that's kind of like we've hit on before. I could definitely see a lot of these first-year coaches going into their second year seeing a lot of transfers this offseason, particularly with the new redshirt rule. I don't know. It just seems like maybe the buy-in factor wasn't there. And I think, obviously, Will Muschamp has it now, so maybe it'll be a different story going into Clemson this year.
Exactly. And maybe you're not trying as hard in practice. And something, you know, with college football, you get out what you put in. And if these guys aren't going 100 miles an hour in practice because they got nothing to play for anymore – then it shows up on game day. So it just – but like I said, the South Carolina team feels a little bit different because they are hanging in some of these games you thought they lost. So I think that's going to start showing here toward the end of the season. There's a lot of seniors, a lot of upperclassmen on that ball club that feels like that they have bought in, and if they can carry the rest of the team, then they should be able to close out this season pretty strong.
All right, Shane, before we move on from South Carolina, Muschamp, he had one other moment that I had to share. It's pretty comical. He was asked, you know, what's the loudest stadium you've ever coached in? And then he was asked to follow up, what's the loudest road stadium you've ever coached in?
Well, you've coached at so many different stadiums. How does the intensity of the crowd noise and just kind of the scene there compare with some of the other, you know, great places that you've been at?
When you put 80,000 people in a spot, it's going to be loud. So it's a good environment.
What's the most intense one you've ever been to?
Waynesboro Stadium. That's a dumb question, James.
Come on, man.
I mean.
How about on the road?
Huh?
On the road.
On the road? Yeah. Waynesboro Stadium. I was an opposing coach. That physical, that phys ed major's doing me wonders.
All right, Shane. Oh, Muschamp's got some jokes, doesn't he?
There ain't a louder stadium in the nation, Mike. You know? kudos. I love listening to his I mean, he is all football, man. He reminds me a lot like Chief, you know, just everything's about football. I bet he goes home and doesn't talk about anything but football. And so I just some of the comments he says is hysterical. So but he is right, though. That is a loud-ass stadium, especially if you get them fans pumped up.
Well, I think what they were trying to get him to say, Shane, was trying to admit that damn Clemson was loud as hell.
And, I thought he was going to say Neyland.
And there's no way in hell he's going to compliment his rival on the damn week of the game, you know?
Yeah, no. I'll never forget when he beat us when he was at Florida and he came up and he says – and he made comment about all our fans and – you know, just disappointed all these fans out there. And you could tell that the crowd noise was getting to him a little bit because he was worked up after the game. So he's been in some loud stadiums, brother.
Well, Shane, speaking of another guy that's broken many a Tennessee hearts, let's jump to Nashville. Derek Mason met with the media on Tuesday. And, you know, Mason, he's always one where I hope he sticks around forever because – I actually think he's doing a really good job there in Nashville, given the resources and the commitment to football, which is to say is just not on the same level as any other SEC school. So he's doing what he can with what he's given. But he has beaten Tennessee 2 years in a row. And the last one, I mean, it was a good old-fashioned ass-whooping. and so he's also entertaining, of course, though. So that's why I'm just kind of mentioning him just why I never want him to go, because he brings a little something extra to Vanderbilt, and he certainly delivered during his Tuesday presser, noting how Nashville is a Commodore town, and he made some comments here about Vanderbilt not being the little brother of Tennessee.
But with that being said, you know, everybody thinks that we're the little brother, okay, or little sister, however you want to call it, little brother, little sister here, man, but we've never felt that way. So with that being said, I think it's going to be a good football game based on the simple fact that these are two football teams that have something to play for. So we're going to line up, we're going to tee it up, and we're going to give Nashville, our city, an opportunity to see exactly, you know, who we're made of, and those guys, you know, down the way are going to, you know, play their best ball as well. So it should be a good one. Yeah, I think there's always pride. You know, when I first came to this city, you know, I mean, the thing that I saw, and it's been prevalent. I mean, when you look up and there's more orange in your own stadium. There's been more orange in your own stadium at times than there was black and gold. Okay, man, I mean, that was my first experience. You know, I mean, since then, I've seen, you know, I mean, this city start to get behind us. I feel like Nashville is our city, and there's been times where, you know, I mean, I didn't feel like that earlier on, but this is our city. You know, with that being said, man, we love this city as much as I want to believe this city loves us. But, you know, I mean, this city gets a chance on Saturday to come out and show that love, and we need that, okay? I mean, we need that. Like I said, for these seniors, it's their last opportunity in this stadium, okay, man? So why not send them out, okay, man, with a bang? Why not make it great? Not good, great, okay, man? Man, we need great on Saturday, and they can be a part of that. So come on out. Let's get this thing done.
He could be the first Vanderbilt coach since the 1920s to win 3 in a row against Tennessee, and at the same time he's worried about how many fans are going to show up.
Derek Mason is like 5'5", so he will always be the little brother. So you ever see him doing that presser? I think it was him. They had him standing on a box and somebody took a picture of it. You know, I like Mason. I really do. And the thing I like about him is it's like he's got a chip on his shoulder, you know. And the team kind of plays like that, which is kind of scary, you know, knowing that he needs this game for a bowl. We need this game for a bowl. And the fact is, like you said, they've had our number 2 years in a row. So we're coming in as underdogs again in the state, our own state. So he is kind of right, and I hate to say it, but this should be a hell of a game, Mike.
How about this, Shane? So here's a little stat that I worked up. I thought this would kind of be the case. Sometimes I look into things that I've got a good feeling on, and This is just kind of states how important it is for Tennessee to come out and have a strong first quarter against Vanderbilt. So Tennessee is obviously 5-7 on the year. Mm-hmm. Or excuse me, 5-6. In their six losses, Shane, Tennessee has been outscored 68-7 in the first quarter. Now, in the five wins, Tennessee has won the first quarter by a score of 33-10. So basically, you know, by my estimation there, I'm not that great at math, but if they're down big in the first quarter, they're not going to win. What are your thoughts on that, Shane?
This is but that's Tennessee's offense. They are like a what's the best way of putting it? They're like a fancier triple option, you know? Like the triple option, if you get the lead and you just keep running it and getting your 3 and 4 yard gains and milk the clock, we do that, but we don't do the option. That's the kind of offense we run. We do 3-4 yard plays, mm-hmm. and, you know, he focuses. If you ever listen to him talk, Coach Pruitt, he says, we've got to have positive plays. And now that's exactly what he means. He doesn't mean 15, 20-yard gashers. He'd love to have that, but he's content with 3 to 4 yards per attempt and keeping his defense off the field. So it doesn't surprise me that when you look at wins and losses, because we don't have the talent as some of these teams that we've faced. If we get behind, and we have it. Like, if you remember the Florida, we had the turnovers, Bama turnovers. Mm-hmm. Those games, when we fall behind a couple of touchdowns from stupid mistakes, this offense just isn't talented enough to get us back in the game, playing the style that they play. So that's just kind of my thoughts when watching them play.
Yeah, and I had someone, because I did put this out on Twitter, Shane, and I had someone come back at me and was like, what the hell do I care what the score is in the first quarter? Like, I just want them to win, damn it. And it's like, no shit, Sherlock, but that's not the point of this. It's just, this is, not, like you're saying, this is not a team that is built to come from behind. They're a defensive running the ball team that does take shots downfield. I think they're still going to have to take those shots, and that's been the key, I think, in all their victories is hitting those big shots, obviously. I think it's obviously a defensive-minded team that is mm-hmm. not very deep. And once you start putting them in a 10-point hole, a 14-point hole, what have you, I mean, I think not only is that demoralizing, but it's just like you're beating your head against a damn wall because the offense is not doing anything, you know? So that's just my point here. It's not to say that, yeah, obviously if Tennessee scores 21 in the first quarter, they're going to win this game. If they allow 21, they're going to lose it. But with these offenses, it's not going to be that way. I think nearly every Vanderbilt game outside of South Carolina and Georgia has been a really tight game. I expect this to be a tight game too, but I think it's just really Tennessee really needs to come out. It seems like they play better on the road, so I don't think that this being away from Neyland Stadium is going to be that bad. Kind of like Mason saying he's calling for Vanderbilt fans to come out, and that's because he knows there's probably going to be more Tennessee fans in the damn stadium. So it may be technically on the road, but this is not a hostile crowd for Tennessee. If they get some stuff going early in the game, I think the crowd will be behind them.
Oh, yeah. And, well, you know, a lot of these teams come out with like a 7-8-play script and or maybe even more plays than that. But they've got, hey, we're going to do this, 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 unless something happens along the way. And it just seems like when we come out with this first drive script, it's just the same monotonous run to the right or the left at least once or twice during the opening three plays. And we find ourselves usually sitting there at 3rd and 6 or 3rd and 7, and then we're asking Garantano to do something with it. And that's, I don't know. It's just, I felt like they opened it up a little bit more against Missouri, but they really didn't do that until Keller came in. So I'm just kind of curious if that's something that they're going to try to expand and try to get, because if you don't get vertical, you're letting those DBs sneak up. You're getting 8 guys in the box, and it's going to be tough to run. And they're going to expect it because that's what you've been doing every time for, you know, 10 games now.
All right, Shane, final team that I wanted to hit on here, obviously the Iron Bowl's this weekend. arguably the biggest rivalry in college football, maybe in all of sports. And Gus Malzahn met with the media on Tuesday, and you know old Gus, he doesn't have much to say. He's half fallen asleep while he's talking, I think. But he did have an interesting point, just the fact that obviously, you know, this is kind of an obvious statement, but plenty of his players know what it's like to take the field with Alabama and beat them. And that, you know, that really makes you think there's very few active college football players that know that feeling, they know what it's like to beat Alabama. So let's jump into these comments and then we'll discuss.
Yeah, I mean, I think it means a whole lot. We do have a bunch of players that played last year. You know, anytime you play the Iron Bowl, really it stands out to me. It's a physical test on both sides, and it's football at its highest. And the fact that we got a lot of guys that have been a part, it does nothing but help us this year, especially going on the road. It's a challenging place to play. Obviously we won in 2010. 2014 was a shootout. We came up a little short, but you got to play good football. I mean, you got to play good, clean football to have a chance to win. You got to make plays on offense. They make you earn it. You're going to have some one-on-one situations. You make plays, and then defensively, you just got to do a good job keeping them out of the end zone. I mean, they're explosive on offense, and they can move the football. And special teams, we've got to win the special teams battle too. So, to have a chance to win, that's what you got to do, at a place like playing there.
All right, Shane, so do you put any stock in, obviously neither one of us is going to be picking Auburn to win this game. I don't think anyone will outside of maybe Gus Malzahn's wife here. But, do you put any stock in the fact that, these players know what it takes to beat Alabama? They've done it, and, that's something that hardly anybody else in college football could say.
Yeah, I mean, say what you want. If there's a big bad bully on your street and he's kicked your ass every time you went around the block, you're going to take somebody with you that's done it before, that's beat him. So it may have been a fluke, it may have been an accident, but it gives you a little bit of courage and the next time you go around the loop, you know what I'm saying? So that's kind of what he's saying with the Auburn staff. I mean, Alabama has been painted this picture as untouchable. They can't be beat. But just last year, this Auburn team and a lot of players on this team were there when they beat Alabama. So it's not as like, for instance, and I hate to keep talking about Tennessee, but when Pruitt was talking about after the Alabama game, he said the Vol fans or the Vol players looked over there and they saw these red jerseys and they just assumed that they were going to lose. And some of them didn't put in the effort needed to stay competitive because they just saw the A on the chest and they thought, hell, we're going to lose this game, and Auburn's not going to come in the game like that. They're going to say, hey, we shocked the world last year. Let's do it again this year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a scary scenario for Alabama, because if Bama comes in and they're already thinking about Georgia and they overlook Auburn, man, I mean, it could be the same scenario as last year.
Yeah, we've seen some wild things, and hell, even I've seen a lot of Auburn teams be big underdogs in this game. They're not afraid of Alabama. They know Gus Malzahn's system, when it works against Alabama. So I don't know. We'll wait and see, obviously. And they do have the defensive line. We've seen that's kind of the key to get to Tua. Mm-hmm. And, they're going to be – I mean, I don't think it's right to say they're going to go out and try to injure him, but they're going to be taking shots at his damn knee and just like I said, just try to limit him, or get him thinking about it.
I'll tell you what, too, man. Auburn can get some pressure on some quarterbacks. I mean, watching the Tennessee – I've watched several games that what's his name, Coe?
Yep, Nick Coe.
That kid is just about every time he's putting pressure on the quarterback. So don't be surprised if Tua – I mean, because they're going to have to dial up something to get Tua moving, because that's the whole goal, is to get Tua moving left and right. Because obviously I don't think they're going to be going for his knee or anything like that, but if they can force him to be mobile and make bad decisions, something he hasn't been able to – had to do this year, then who knows what can happen with this game.
What would happen, Shane?
Alabama's still probably going to win.
No, hear me out.
Okay.
What would happen if Gus Malzahn breaks out the Citadel triple option?
I'd love it, man. I'd love it. Could you think Stenham can run that?
Oh yeah, he'd run it like a pro.
I'd love it. I think they need to get that little what's that little slasher they got back there? What's his name?
Willis.
Yeah, the one that smoked us when we went down there. Like, he's the only one that had positive yards. He was banged up at the start of the season.
Oh, Schwartz?
Yeah, Schwartz, man. Get that little kid some. Give him the ball. I want to see some reverses. I want to see, some underneath stuff. I mean, you're going to have to bring out all the trick. I mean, you got to send Dan Mullen's trick book and just bring it up here to this game. It's going to be awesome.
O'Shea, one final note I have here for you before we get into your latest history lesson.
Mm-hmm.
The Frank Broyles Award, you know, that goes annually to the nation's top assistant coach. Yep. They announced their semifinalists today. And we've got four coaches from the SEC. The offensive coordinator there at Alabama, Mike Locksley. Georgia offensive line coach, Sam Pittman.
Mm.
LSU defensive coordinator, Dave Aranda. And Mississippi State defensive coordinator, Bob Shoup. Which coach, which unit do you think has done the best job this year out of those four?
I got to give it to Bob right now. You know, holding these guys without touchdowns and stuff. I mean, that defense has really been impressive.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's hilarious to talk about Alabama's because if you remember the start of the season, we're like, we don't even know these guys. They're going to be jokers, you know. And then here they come out, Alabama. So I don't know if that's more the talent or more the coordinator or whatever it is. But
I think it's a talent.
Yeah, I think that definitely helped. But I think what Bob has done has been extremely impressive and overlooked. A lot of people don't realize just how great he's made that defense.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a comeback for him also, obviously, because I think his reputation took a big hit there in Knoxville, and he's once again shown that he knows what the hell he's doing.
Yeah, for sure, man.
All right, Chase. So speaking of Mississippi State and Ole Miss, your latest history lesson is on the Egg Bowl. You want to preview this one?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was always curious why it was called this, and I'll tell you what, man, I couldn't fit it all in this 2-3 minute segment. If you get some time, you should see some of the stuff, some of the tactics used by the coaches and the players. I mean, this thing's got everything from spies to fights to, I mean, it's a great story, man. And it should be told. This is a rivalry that started back in the early 1900s. And, it's been carrying on for almost, I think this will be the 115th time they've met. So, I hope you guys enjoy.
Welcome into your weekly history report. I'm your host, Professor Shane. Today we're going to dive into a Thanksgiving special, the Egg Bowl with Mississippi State and Ole Miss Rebels. I don't know if they're called the Rebels. I know that at one point they were called the Floods, the University Boys, Home Team, Oxford Boys, Mississippians, Varsity, Varsity 11, Red and Blue, Wampus Cats, Black Bears, Rebels, and Land Sharks. But let's just call them the Rebels. Bulldogs unofficially became the Bulldogs in 1961. Unofficially became the Bulldogs in 1905 when they shut out the Rebels 11-0. Cadets of Mississippi State had a ceremony and buried the athletic spirit with a Bulldog pup placed on top of the coffin, hence the Bulldogs. But speaking of names, why is it called the Egg Bowl, Shane? It's 1926. Rebels had ended a 13-game losing streak by defeating the Bulldogs 7-6. Ole Miss fans stormed the field. Now, many fans attempted to tear the goalpost down, and Bulldog fans didn't enjoy their property being destroyed, so they took to them with cane bottom chairs. That's right, cane bottom chairs, and fights broke out. The mayhem continued until most of the chairs were splintered. Now, to prevent this, the student sections got together and created a trophy, a wooden box with a golden football on top, called the Golden Egg. Now, remember, this is the 20s, and a football actually looked like an egg back then, or a rugby ball, if you will. The Egg Bowl wasn't coined until 1979 by a sports writer named Tom Patterson. Now, this depth of the rivalry goes deeper than most, and coaches capitalized on the hatred as well. Mullen would go as far as taping Ole Miss jerseys to the floor so that they would get used to stomping on the Rebels. Ole Miss coaches would pay planes to drop pamphlets. saying Mississippi State threats to make the Ole Miss Rebels think the Bulldogs were behind it. Fights, tons of fights, spies even. Ask Cutcliffe, during the Egg Bowl practice one year, Ole Miss coach Cutcliffe spotted a spy in the stands. An assistant raced to the maroon spec. When confronted, the coach yelled, "It's a spy! It's a Mississippi State spy! What should I do with him?" Cutcliffe said, "Throw him off the side." And the coach did as he's told. Three-story fall and splat. But calm down, it was just a mannequin and an awesome story. This game will have two new coaches, but it's the same two hateful-ass teams. This Thanksgiving, be thankful for all you have, your loved ones, your delicious meal, and this bitter rivalry. I give you the Egg Bowl, and now you know why.
All right, Shane. I don't know about the listeners, but I sure did. I learned a lot about that damn golden egg trophy thing. Hell, it sounds like it, as heated as this damn rivalry is, used to be even worse. They were beating each other's ass with wooden canes here.
Yeah, wooden chairs. And you know, it's funny is like I always thought the golden egg. I thought it had something to do with an egg. And then you got Mississippi State with the cowbells. I was like, is this just? I thought it was like a farm thing, you know. And come to find out, they had nothing to do with it. It's because the football was shaped like an egg back then, and that's how they made the statue or the trophy. So I thought that was pretty cool. Now, a fun fact I wasn't able to include in it. Do you know where the cowbells came from?
No.
Early 1900s, Mississippi State game was interrupted by a Jersey cow coming onto the field, and it had one of those bells on it. And then somebody got the bright idea, you know, because they won the game, that it was a good luck charm. So They started making their own bells and bringing them in, and it's stuck ever since. So that thing's been around.
Rival fans have been suffering ever since.
Oh, man, I tell you what, too. A little bit, because I have done a lot of research on this. Mississippi State, because this is where the game's going to be, or Ole Miss, I'm sorry. But they crack down big time on these bells, and they will search bags, and they got big trash cans. So if they catch your bail, you're going to have to throw it in the trash.
All right, Shane, I think that's all I got on this one. You got anything before we hop off here?
No. I mean, Thanksgiving's right around the corner, brother. We've got some good games. I don't know what we're going to do with our Thanksgiving schedule. We'll probably bring that up tomorrow.
How about we just do it now, Shane? Because I was thinking what we do is tomorrow, which would be Wednesday evening, we'll record our picks podcast.
Okay.
Put that out on Thanksgiving morning. I know hopefully no one has to work. I know some of us do. I actually have to work that evening, but so don't feel too bad if you do. But, you know, we like to put that out there for mostly for people's commutes and whatnot. But, I know obviously people are going to be out there driving to their destination. So, give people something to listen to, and just obviously there's a game that night and Friday, so I think we'll skip the Friday one just because almost everybody has that off, I would imagine, and so we'll just kind of give you your weekend picks all there on Thursday.
Okay, that sounds perfect. Perfect, man. And appreciate all the listeners hanging out with us during the holidays here, and you know, this is our first season, and first season of plenty, I hope, and appreciate everybody that's took time to rate and review us on iTunes, and that really does help us out quite a bit. But that's all I got, Mike.
All right, Shane, thanks for joining me. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We really appreciate it, and we'll catch you on the next one.
All right, see you guys. Go Vols.